Hi, I'm Carrie Bishke, professional athlete, licensed therapist, and mindset coach. I created Ready, Set, Mindful as an online mental health resource for athletes and high performers like you. And this is the Ready, Set, Mindful podcast. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Ready, Set, Mindful podcast. I am your host, Carrie Bishke, founder of Ready, Set, Mindful. I am an athlete, therapist turned mindset coach who now works with athletes and high performers. For more on me, make sure to go check out readysetmindful.com. I'm so excited to have my guest today, my friend Mo Tixazadeh, and he is going to be here with us. He's amazing. He works with athletes and is all about optimizing mental and physical performance. He has a really interesting trajectory. He's a former professional volleyball and international volleyball player turned chemist. He now has his PhD in chemistry. He is the owner of Formex, a supplement company that has quality supplements made by athletes for athletes. So he's doing some really cool stuff there. Welcome to the podcast, Mo.
Thanks for having me, Carrie. And I think this is a good opportunity for me to thank you for the content that you're producing for athletes and non-athletes. I think everything that you make is so passionately and professionally made that it's just a great resource for athletes to tap into and tune in if they need to maximize their performance, if they need to just find some space where they can relate. So thank you on behalf of the athletic community.
Oh, of course. Thank you so much. I mean, I feel like you can probably relate to this, like as an athlete, you know, creating content and doing something that you're super passionate about, just it's all in alignment. Like being an athlete is such a big piece of our identity. You can't just like shove that in the corner, right? So it's something that we kind of carry with us. And I've always figured out how can I kind of incorporate my athletic identity into what I do. And you're doing kind of the same thing with Formex, right? I mean, creating supplements, clean quality supplements, for athletes by an athlete who was kind of frustrated that nothing like that existed, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's a massive part of us. We spend years and years playing this sport we love. So you can't get rid of it. It's part of your personality. It's part of who you are.
Yeah, for sure. And yeah, I'm so excited to get into that with you because you have such an interesting trajectory. Mo and I played volleyball together at University of East London, and he was on the men's team, I was on the women's team, and I was getting my first master's degree there. He was getting his PhD. I probably should have just gotten my PhD instead of a couple of different masters, but what are you going to do? So yeah, we just became good friends and then we've kept in touch and are now kind of on just like these interesting paths that intersected. So I'm excited to kind of talk about everything with you. And it feels like it was another world ago that we were in London, you know, how long was it?
Oh, I was thinking about it earlier. I think it was 2015. So 8 years ago. But it feels like yesterday. So, yeah,
that's super wild. Yeah, I think, and you're in London now still, right? And you're at your home office today.
Yeah, I'm at home. I didn't actually go to the office today. My office is at University of Greenwich where I do my research and I'm a guest lecturer there as well. But it's exam time. So I would have had students knocking on my office door every 2 minutes asking a question. So I thought, let's keep this uninterrupted. So I stayed at home. Right. I'm at home today. Yeah.
I love it. Okay. So if you're listening to this, great. If you're watching it on YouTube or on the website, we both have our cool plant vibes behind us. So make sure you go check out the video on YouTube. But yeah, I want to hear just about your trajectory. You've had such like an interesting path, you know, coming from being from Iran originally, and then coming to the UK and staying there for as long as you have. That's a really big step to move there by yourself because your family's all still in Iran, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think it was a big step, but I was too young to really comprehend the magnitude of what I'm getting myself into. And So I'm the youngest of five. And I think my dad always had that forward vision of, okay, you guys, every single one of you, you need to travel abroad, you need to study abroad, you need to do this. So he, you know, there was a phase where all of my siblings tried to kind of get abroad and get a visa to study abroad and further their education in different countries. But unfortunately, none of them actually succeed. And so, yeah. So
you're the only hype, you're the only one out of the five.
I am the only one. So that hype kind of got like built and destroyed three or four times before me. And so when it got to me, even though life was great, volleyball was going good. I was in the, you know, junior team, so I was in the national camps, all of that sort. Life was good, but I think because it was such a big hype about going abroad and studying abroad that when I actually had the opportunity and when my visa came through, it was just a no-brainer. I think it was like a family decision. Everyone was like, yes, you're going. I was like, okay, cool. So yeah, I think I didn't really get to understand the magnitude of it.
And how old were you at that point?
So I just turned 17 when I came to the UK.
Oh my gosh, you're a baby.
Yeah. I didn't understand. So I just thought, okay, cool. Yeah, England, let's go. Let's do it.
Let's go. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I mean, that's so cool that your dad had that path, kind of, you know, those values of traveling and really like furthering your education and, you know, going and getting out and exploring, you know, because look at where you are. I mean, that's so crazy.
100%. I think my dad has always been about 20, 30 years ahead of everyone else around him. I mean, I remember when we were, 9, 10 years old, we had that family desktop computer when, you know, we were only allowed to spend half an hour on it. He used to tell us, okay, you need to learn how to use Photoshop, Adobe Cloud, you need to learn how to code, programming, this sort of thing. None of us listened. And only when I turned 30 and I had to use those skills, I was like, aha, okay, that's why.
Oh my gosh. Those are stories that I'm sure your dad would be like loving to hear, that like he's like, yeah. Oh yeah, I knew what I was talking about.
Exactly.
And did you always have an interest in chemistry? Like, when did that kind of what made you want to decide to then choose a, you know, a PhD program? And yeah, where did that interest kind of come from?
So I come to the UK, my English wasn't that good, so I started my A-levels, and I think whoever has studied A-levels is like a pre-university kind of program. It's a two-year program before you enter university in the UK. And I think whoever's done A-levels would relate to this, that it's kind of like the hardest part of your education. It was harder than doing a PhD. Well, kind of. At its own level. Wow. And so I came to the UK, started after 4 or 5 months of studying English, I started my A-levels, and the first year of A-levels was really difficult, mainly because of the English barrier that I had, and having to study biology, chemistry, these sort of things in a completely different language. It was a little bit difficult, to a point that I remember my biology teacher pulled me to side. I was like, look, we don't think you can do it. I was like, look, give me until end of the year, we'll pull through. So got through the first year. Second year, I met this chemistry teacher, and this old dude who felt sorry for me, I guess. And he started saying, okay, cool, I'm going to break everything down for you. And he went to the most basic parts of chemistry, and he just explained everything to me. And I fell in love. I fell in love with chemistry. I was like, all right, this is what I want to do. And so if you know anything about Iranian families, as soon as you say you love chemistry, they go, you're going to be a pharmacist, and you're going to have a high street. You're going to have a high street pharmacy, and you're going to be rich. You're going to be all right. I was like, okay, cool. So pharmacy it is. But unfortunately, by end of second year, fortunately or unfortunately, actually, end of second year of A levels, because my first year grade wasn't good, the combined results didn't match for me to get into pharmacy, which I think is the best thing that happened to me, because the next thing, the closest thing to pharmacy, to the actual degree of pharmacy, was pharmaceutical chemistry or pharmaceutical sciences, which I went and studied. Mm. And as soon as I started studying that course, I was like, all right, so this is more chemistry than the actual course of pharmacy. This actually worked out really well. And so
you would have never known.
I would have known. Yeah, because pharmacy itself as a degree is, you know, when you have a high street pharmacy or when you have a pharmacist that works in a hospital, it's mainly about, okay, learning the drug and learning the diseases, and then go like, okay, so you need this drug for this disease, and then I'm just going to prescribe it for you. You need this for that. Whereas the pharmaceutical sciences and the chemistry that goes into pharmaceutical sciences is, okay, how do we actually make this drug? Okay, when if you combine this molecule with this molecule, what happens? And then, okay, how do we need to mask the taste? How do we need to make them? How do we test them? And I was like, this is actually what I wanted to study, not the pharmacy. And so I continued all the way to PhD. That's what I did. Just went all the way.
That's so cool. I mean, what a cool path that sometimes like the worst, you know, seemingly like the worst thing sometimes, especially in that situation, like, oh my God, I didn't get into my, you know, my dream program or this program that my family really kind of wanted me to go into. But then what like a cool blessing that it's, you know, you're like, actually, I get to use my creative brain, and like, this is some way, way better cool shit over in this department. So that's awesome. I'm glad that it worked. I'm glad that it worked out like that. Sometimes you need a little space away from like, cause it burns, right? If you're like, oh, I didn't get in, and then it, the cool stuff comes later. But I'm glad that is like the path that you want to be on ultimately.
Oh yeah. I'm happy to. It worked out for the best.
Yeah,
for sure.
I love it. What was like the hardest transition, you know, because you spent so much of your life playing, you know, playing volleyball and having that like identity as an athlete, and then you went into such an academic focus. Like how was that shift for you, or was that challenging for you, like that transition?
No, not so much, because I think when I came to the UK, volleyball wasn't as intense as it was back home. It was, okay, after school, we go play volleyball. And then on the weekends, we go play the games. And even the training sessions wasn't every day, that would consume too much of my time. And so my studies became a big part of, because I was here alone in the UK. So my studies and the time that I spent at school or at university or in the library became a big part of it. And so I think it was season 2014, 2015 season, after the second All-Star game that I played, and I had to start my PhD. I didn't feel that I'm losing out on something, because I spent 6-7 years in, you know, English Super League and played the top level, etc. So when I actually wanted to shift, I had developed so much interest in chemistry. I developed so much liking of the topic of chemistry, that when I actually wanted to transition into academic life and start my PhD and, you know, say goodbye to volleyball, you know, we can never say goodbye to volleyball. We always go back. Like me, I started coaching a couple of years ago. But anyway, that transition didn't feel that weird. It was all right. It felt good. Yeah. It felt like, okay, I've done that part. I did as much as I could in the UK. Maybe if I had chosen a different country other than the UK, maybe if my dad, instead of sending me to the UK, sent me to Brazil or Italy, would have been different. But I think I've accomplished decent stuff in England, and it's good time for me to transition into academic. And it felt fulfilling. It was a fulfilling feeling.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. I think like for transitions too, especially like athletes who are transitioning maybe away from their sport, excuse me, like away from their sport, doing something different. If that passion or that career or that next move doesn't, like, isn't as fulfilling and doesn't fill you up, and mentally, spiritually, emotionally, like in a few different aspects, then it feels like, okay, like maybe your brain wants to wander to what else you could be doing over here in this arena, the volleyball arena, you know? But if that other topic, if that other field is as interesting and lights you up as much, it eases that transition, right?
Oh yeah, definitely. I think
you have that passion for chemistry. Yeah.
Oh, 100%. I think it was, everything fall into place quite nicely for me. And I'm grateful for the journey that the universe has put in front of me. I think everything worked out really well.
Yeah, for sure. Oh my gosh. Sorry. It's if you guys can hear, it's a little bit loud. I forget that I live so close to an Air Force base sometimes, but they're doing exercises. And so there's some fun planes flying over right now. So hopefully I'll edit that out a little bit, but hopefully it's not too distracting for anybody. Fun thing of living close to the base. I think how I'm curious, like your volleyball journey, what were like the biggest differences from playing in Iran to London, just to give people maybe some context for things that, you know, biggest differences that you noticed from making that transition?
I think there's a massive difference. I mean, we are comparing a country that volleyball is one of the first sports, one of the national sports in that country, to England, who, you know, there's not enough resources for volleyball. They don't really care about volleyball, unfortunately. I mean, they do have leagues and different leagues, and that's just passionate people coming behind it. They're not there to make money. They're not there to actually develop. Well, maybe they are to develop the sport, but with very limited resources. I mean, I remember when I was 13, 14, we were going to these camps for like, you know, halfway through the school, we were going to these 2-3 weeks camps with whether the regional team or the national. We were going to this camps and we were out of school, and the federation would send letters to the school saying, okay, these guys are going to be away for these 2-3 weeks, can you make sure that you've got resources to make sure these guys stay up to date with it. Even at the age of 14-15, I remember we were getting everything paid for, we were getting all the accommodation paid for, we were getting annual bonuses, and it felt good to be part of that. But then you come to England, and I've only realized this because I started coaching a junior team. You get great talent. You get great junior talent in England, and they can't make it to the national team just because they can't pay that £500 or £500 to actually, be on that national camp. So basically, it's kind of a discrimination for those talented individuals who just financially can't afford to be on the national team. There are massive differences. I think, it's just resources, making sure that junior team, national team, everybody get equal exposure to resources.
Yeah, that sounds like such a, I mean, I remember when I was there, it was the very little attention, like to detail, just when you come from these other structured environments where you're supported, you know, financially and developmentally and all these things. And then you go into this other space that's just kind of like a free for all, kind of chaotic. Yeah. It's a tough transition, you know? All the fun transitions. That's a topic of mine. I have a blog on the transitions that athletes face. So if you are an athlete and you're listening to this, make sure to go check out the blog on readysetmindful.com. It's a real thing, the transitions that we face. And I think, it's taking these next steps in our journey, and how do we kind of like keep our athletic identity, but we're maybe like moving away in this direction over here with a bigger focal point. So yeah, the transitions are interesting. And I'm curious, like for you with that transition of like, when did you know that you wanted to create supplements, right? Like when did that kind of come about? Was there a seed planted when you were playing and you're like, oh, I wish I had something that I could depend on that's trustworthy and like clean and quality, but like you couldn't find anything. Like, where did that come from?
I was into my supplements at all times. I mean, I always looked, you know, the ate healthy. I was always supplementing. Even when I was playing, I was ambassador for some supplement brands, etc. But I think the whole idea of me creating my own supplement came about. So I finished my PhD and secured a job at Big Pharma. The luxury corporate pharma. So thinking that I know the science of it, I'm going to go into Big Pharma, and that's where all the, you know, cutting edge research and technologies, and I'm going to help patients. Little did I know that the reality is very far from it. And so I quit pharma.
What? What do you mean? That's another podcast.
So I quit pharma, and I thought, okay, what can I do to help individuals become healthier, be healthier, and develop healthy habits? At the time I was living with this guy who was a programmer. So he was like, okay, let's make it an app and these sort of things. And I thought, okay, there are loads of apps out there. And if it's an app, it's kind of like really difficult to really send that message across. I want a more practical approach. I started putting together formulations. I said, okay, cool. I know this is my area. I know how to make this. I know how to make a good quality product that can help people become active, stay healthy, and develop a lifestyle that can, you know, make them healthier, hopefully, or at least maintain that level of health. And so I started putting things together. I started doing research and research into different ingredients that I've tried, ingredients that are out there and other people have tried. That's the point where I thought, okay, supplements it is. I'm going to make supplements and I'm going to try it that way. I'm going to try and reach out to as many people as I can and promote healthy living.
Yeah, I love it. What a shift. I mean, I have a couple of other friends who are in the pharma space who are moving away from the pharma space for similar reasons, right? There's that plane. Like, so close to the house, it feels like it's I think you don't know something until you kind of get into it, right? And then if you truly 100%. Do have this intention of like, I just ultimately like very genuinely want to help people and have an investment in their health and want to see good things for them, and then that trajectory wasn't working out, so you tried something different. But what are you like, what do you think is something that most people don't know maybe about, like, say, like pharma or like the supplement industry, right? Like it's kind of can be scary and like kind of crazy out there, like the Wild West. Like how do people decide like what to purchase? Like what's like a scary truth and something that people can maybe like latch onto when they're making decisions of supplements to get?
I think there are a few really good supplement companies, and as I said, I've been an ambassador for a few, there are some really good supplement brands out there. So probably what I'm saying doesn't apply to a lot of people, but the scary truth is that there are more marketeers in the supplement industry than scientists. It creates hype rather than facts. I think that's the scary truth, because people will buy into the marketing. They will buy into that scientifically proven. Whereas scientifically proven is where manufacturers test. We are a manufacturer. We don't outsource our manufacturing, but I think about 90% of the, maybe it's an exaggeration, so don't quote me for it, but a lot of supplement brands just outsource their manufacturing to somebody else. And when you outsource it to somebody, another manufacturer that is producing capsules for another 10 supplement brands, then you're just one of many. They're probably not going to care about every single capsule that is in the uniformity. They might do, they might not, and that's why I didn't want to put everyone's in the same basket. I think there are a lot of marketeers. We need more science in supplement industry, because the ingredients that are in there, it's all about the ingredients. How good are those ingredients? How well have they been put together, and how well have they been tested by the manufacturer who's put them together? Because have they looked at it at molecular level to see what are the effects? Have they looked at it when I don't know, this ingredient X and Y and Z have been mixed together, what are the effects then? We're definitely. I do know that a lot of people come and say, okay, it's third party tested to make sure that it's valid. And I'm in the game of, I'm a scientist, I'm in the game of testing myself. I work with these chromatography machines or spectroscopy machines and these sort of things. And I know that if you give it to a third party company to test it for you, let's say I'm giving it to third party company X to test it for banned substances. They will only test it for banned substances. So they will run it in a spectroscopy, right, or in a chromatography. And as long as they, right, say, okay, there is no banned substances in here, that's it. They've done their job, they've got their money, they're certified the product, you get that badge. But have they tested it for anything else? Have they looked at every single ingredient? Have they tested how pure they are? Have they tested the molecular level? What happens to your body? What happens to the product that goes into your body? And for me, yeah, that's the scary truth, because yeah, you got to be scientists. So you're gonna have to rely on science. That's for me.
Yeah, that, man, that makes so much sense. And like, it's something that I'm aware of, just at like on a larger level of, especially here in the States, like it's very, very different, like abroad, like the food standards and different regulations and things like that. But here in the States, it's also, right, like things can be labeled natural and healthy. And like, there's, we have regulations and certification processes, but it's a lot easier for things to slip through the cracks over here. And people have to be so mindful and so freaking diligent about the food that you're consuming and what you're being sold to. Cause it is, at the end of the day, like, it's kind of a shitty, like bleak truth that you're just being marketed to like all day, and like food included. And like, it's a hard truth to kind of swallow that like the government or like brands like don't have your best interests at heart ultimately. Like, look at the food pyramid and like, you know, look at a lot of messaging. Comes back to like money, right? So supplements, of course, are like included in that. And so I think, as exhausting as it is for people to kind of like do their due diligence, and I know the bandwidth is like hard at the end of the day, you don't want to take that energy with your purchasing decisions, but I think when you have quality, clean, like small batch, like production stuff, you can kind of count on, yes, it's going to be more expensive, you know, for sure. But the question I always ask myself is like, it's expensive for, okay, which reasons, right? Like, what due diligence are they doing that another company that says that they have similar ingredients, like why is there such a big discrepancy, right? And it's often with like the clean quality, like you said, like doing your own manufacturing, things that people just don't know unless you talk to a scientist who points out all these things, right?
Yeah. And I think that's another thing. I think the companies that are confident about their manufacturing, they're confident about their processes, if you contact them, on the bottle it would say, you know, manufactured for this company or manufactured on behalf of this company in the UK or in the USA. That means it's a third party manufacturing for somebody else. And if a brand is confident about that, they would have no problem, you know, sharing information. Okay, who the actual manufacturer is. But unfortunately, a lot of people they'd be like, oh no, that's our concern. Like, we don't share that information, etc. And the other thing is, which would relate to this context, is staying up with the science. I think, and I want to point out one of our findings in the past few months with you around L-carnitine. So, staying up with the science. So what do I mean by staying up with the science? It means that there are some ingredients that have been worked, for decades, for maybe 10, 20 years, and people have put them in the, you know, different supplementation. But as a scientist, our job is to keep finding new stuff. Why? Because we need to find out where are these diseases are coming from. And so we go back to the root, we go back to the source, and we look at every single ingredient. And that's the whole point of science. And that's the whole point of us scientists looking at a Petri dish or a beaker all day in the labs, is to find new things that can promote your health, that can really make you healthier. And so an example of it, I'll tell you an example of it. So L-carnitine or acetyl carnitine in particular, it's been used by athletes for a very long time. It converts fat into energy, and it's been used for, it's used in pre-workouts at the moment, and that's fantastic. It does turn fat into energy, but it creates a pathway in your gut. L-carnitine is transformed into TMAO, which is trimethyl amine oxide, which is a gut bacteria byproduct. And what happens is eventually L-carnitine causes thrombosis, which leads to cardiovascular diseases and a stroke. And so the actual L-carnitine, okay, fine. But what is the long-term effect? Okay, this is a recent finding, and I think Stanley Hazen and his team, I think they're doing their work in Cleveland. They've done fantastic work on this for many years, and I think the latest results they've published around this is really critical. So you just need to stay up with science. I remember me in the beginning of putting stuff together, okay, putting ingredients together, I thought about acetyl carnitine, because it's, you know, it's been used for many years, and you know, it helps athletes and this. But when you actually do the research, when you actually find these articles that are recently published, you're like, okay, cool. Do you know what? Forget about that. There are better things. We can overcome it. There are more natural things that we can replace this with. And so I think again, supplement brands need to take responsibility for that, because I don't think consumers who are looking to, you know, a gym goer or somebody who, as an athlete, you young athlete, you don't really look into, okay, what is the gut bacteria byproduct that I need to look out for? These are the sort of things that the scientific team of your supplement brand needs to be aware of and make sure that they protect you against them. And so, yeah, sorry, it was a very long answer, but I think it was necessary to point out that, you know, you've got to look out for your ingredients, and you've got to choose trusted brands that have the best interest in heart for you.
100%. And I think, I mean, that just speaks to like the integrity of your brand, that you're willing to, you know, do that and stay up on the research and to make those hard choices. You know, it's probably easier to maybe include that as an ingredient because it's, you know, maybe it's cheaper or it's like more researched and has more data behind it, but really it's like, okay, we have to look at and really value the new actual data that's coming out, that, you know, so it's important to question things. And exactly what you said, like young athletes athletes are going to see one thing, right? Like, how can this help me? Like, is this drug banned? Or like, is it, you know, is it going to get me in trouble? Or, you know, and how is it going to improve my performance? Right. And so you see kind of like a tagline of like turns fat into energy. Right. And that's like what they'll kind of get fixated on. So it's like, what else should they be looking for? Like, what are some easy questions, I guess, or things to keep in mind for people that are like buying supplements? Like, what are the top things to look for if someone's just like, I don't know where to freaking start? Like, where should I look? The manufacturing is like a big one. We kind of talked about that. Like, what else are big, like, red flags?
I think I would start with the label. The label is the most important thing. I think whether you're buying supplements or food, I think looking at the label is the most important thing. Okay, I'm looking at the label and, you know, it explains everything. It says, okay, we've put magnesium, but what kind of magnesium, at what level? And these sort of things, I think a good supplement brand would say which type of magnesium they're putting. And then you can specifically go and research about that specific type of magnesium. Okay, so for example, we put magnesium bisglycinate, which is one of the most bioavailable magnesium. So on our label, we put magnesium as magnesium bisglycinate. So I think good manufacturers or good supplement brands, they're not worried about revealing those information as opposed to just say, we use magnesium, calcium, blah, 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 blah. They really break it down for you on the label, because that's what you're going to see. You're not going to, you know, see anything else. You're not going to see their, you know, spec sheets or anything like that within their folder. All you see is the label. And so I think a good starting point is the label. Read the label. Make sure you understand the label and go from there.
Yeah, that's such a good point. I agree. And a lot of people may not even know that magnesium, that there are different variations of magnesium, right? Maybe because you're used to seeing a label that just says, you know, magnesium. And so there's all these different types of magnesium. But yeah, the most bioavailable, it's obviously you're going to be paying a little bit more, you know, for the most bioavailable, you know, forms of these things. But it's, do you want to put quality things in your body, right? Like at the end of the day.
100%.
Yeah, that works. Yeah.
Right.
It's crazy. I'm sure you learned so much from, you know, from pharma too. So you know, all these like red flags and all the questions to ask yourself. And so you have that. But I think, yeah, just as a consumer, being, having your mind like trained to kind of know what to look for, you know, it's just, it helps you make more mindful decisions, you know, and it's all about being mindful about your decisions. So we'll definitely like link the supplements and, everything that we've kind of talked about, and maybe that study that you were talking about from Cleveland, I'll link that in the show notes as well. Cause it's important for people to have that information, you know? When people hear that you're like a chemist or that you are in the profession that you're doing, like, what's the biggest misconception maybe, or like funny thing that people say to you?
Oh, I think the best one is you make drugs, and I say if there's got to be one Heisenberg to make the good stuff,
there you go.
I think Iranian
Walter White.
Exactly. And I spend a lot of time in the lab. I prefer it. I know I've got to be the business manager and the carry on with the business, but I do love my time in the lab. And then I spend lots of time with my team in the lab and be in the production. I really enjoyed it. So people, they see me in the white coat, and that's the first thing they say: you make drugs for a living.
You're a drug maker. I love it. Such a different side of you. Like, I remember when, you know, just more backstory, when Mo and I were living in London, he got me my first job. Well, technically I was a nanny. Gosh, how many jobs did I have in London? I was like really busy. I'm like, how did I get anything done? I was a nanny playing for Polonia, playing for UEL, and then also as a tour guide. I was the worst tour guide ever, by the way, but Mo hired me. I was a tour guide for the company he was working for, Oxford International, yeah, and guiding like groups of students all through London and surrounding areas. It was so much fun, but yeah, it was, yeah, such a different, you wore so many different hats back then too. Like you were a tour guide, you were in your PhD program, you were playing volleyball. We were all just doing like so many different things. It was a fun time.
Oh yeah, I mean, when you're young, you have to try different things and find what really suits you. I think Oxford International was a great time of my life. I spent it for 10 years. That was a college I studied English and I went back to. So yeah.
Oh, cool. I love it. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So thank God, no future in being a tour guide. So that's fine. I found another path. let's do athletes and high performers, like, let's just talk about the benefits of taking supplements. And I mean, if you're an athlete or a high performing person listening to this, like, what are some common things for, you know, supplements to work wonders for athletes? Like, what are some things that you've noticed and that you would say?
I think as an athlete, and it comes from my personal experience and from people who I've coached or people who I've been teammates with, it's just staying away from stimulators, as much as stimulators as you can, because I feel like a lot of the supplements out there, they're focusing on more caffeine, more sugar, more, yeah, and you just, I feel like you don't need that many stimulants, because as an athlete, your performance is important, but a huge part of your performance, I think even 50% of your performance, is your recovery. And so if you're taking all of these supplements that are triggering you, and there are stimulants and just keep you going without any break, yeah, and you don't get to have that quality recovery after that because your body is so awake and, you know, full of stimulants, then you're not going to really be able to maximize that performance. And I think caffeine is one of it, and that's exactly why we kept our products completely caffeine free, because caffeine doesn't really give you energy. What it does is it blocks the adenosine, which is a neurotransmitter, and reduce the activity of adenosine. Sorry, it doesn't block it completely. And what happens is that you just feel like you feel restless instead of actually, yeah, giving you energy. And so I think athletes need to focus on cellular energy production, ATP, and I think food, carbohydrates, healthy fats, these are good sources of it. In our products for producing cellular energy, we've included cordyceps, CoQ10, I think focus on naturally producing that energy instead of having to rely on stimulants, because at the end of the day, if you're performing in front of 10,000 people, 50,000 people, 200,000 people, and all you've had is a stimulants and caffeine, then you're just going to be like, okay, where do I start? How can I perform? And your performance is going to be affected because your body is not you. Your body is is affected by stimulants.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. As you were saying that, just, I remember I used to, when I was playing in London and when I was playing in Spain too, I would just like drink like two espressos, like before each game, like just to kind of get a little buzzy so that it was, you know, my hands were kind of just slightly shaking. And I'm like, looking back on that, like, oh my gosh, like, I'm so sorry. I put my hands over my heart and I'm just like, body, thank you so much for putting up with me. Like, I'm so sorry for what I put you through. I thought that that was you know, the best thing for me. And I'm like, why did I have so much anxiety when I was playing? Like, why was my brain just racing? And I had a hard time sleeping, like all of these things that you just don't put together. But now looking back, you're like, of course that made sense. Like I was totally overstimulating my system, and rest and recovery really wasn't, those weren't like awesome terms that a ton of people were talking about even just a few years ago. Now we know so much more, and it makes so much more sense to focus on those things, right? And energy, like, okay, what's actually going to give you true energy, not just like a band-aid, like quick fix, you know, of caffeine.
Exactly. And I don't mean that coffee is bad. Like I'm not referring to coffee. I think, everything. Yeah, exactly. If that's the first thing I do in the morning, I have my coffee, and I there's nothing against coffee or caffeine. I think having balanced sort of diet in everything, in every aspect of your diet, having a balanced diet is really key. But having to rely on 4 or 5 shots of espresso, 4 or 5 coffees a day, you know, that really isn't the solution. Where science have come so far to offer you alternative natural, you know, substances and compounds that can give you that energy so naturally that you feel better. You feel more energized, and you will feel more powerful doing those. And so I think there are better substitutes to caffeine than having to just load your body with a ton of it.
For sure. 100%. And I mean, I've taken I've taken your supplements, and I talked to you about this the other day. Like I really do feel like they have helped me on like my longer bike rides that I've been doing for training for my half Ironman, which is next week, which is crazy. But I do some bike rides where I'm on the bike for like 3 or 4 hours, and it's a long time. I'll put on like a Joe Rogan podcast or like a longer form podcast and just, you know, grinding. But I'll still kind of get bored and my focus will shift. And then honestly, like after I started taking those supplements for, you know, probably like after the fifth day, like I remember taking 2 rides in a row and I was like, okay, for whatever reason, I mean, the supplements are helping me concentrate for a little bit longer. Like I felt like I wasn't getting as distracted. Like I was focused and really like just leaning in. And I was like, you know, doing a few other things. You never really know exactly what it is to point to, but I really was pretty in tune that the supplements were really helping me with my focus and concentration. So, I mean, I truly believe in like the power of good quality, clean supplements that really can help you, you know, optimize your performance. Especially for like endurance athletes too, where you're just getting super depleted, you know, pretty chronically. You got to kind of fill your body. You got to nourish it back up. You know, so yeah, I love what you're doing. I'm all about those supplements. How did you decide like what to put in? Like, I love the cordyceps, like, you know, ashwagandha, like all these different things that you're putting in. How did you kind of decide, what to put in them?
Yeah. That's a good question. So, the way I went about it, I knew what I wanted to get. What the outcome was, what did I want to get out of it? What did I want athletes to get out of it? So I wanted athletes, and I was flashing back. I was like, okay, let's define athletes. Athletes are those who train whether 2-3 times a day, or they train so hard for, let's say, a 4-hour session or for a 3-hour session, that endurance, that performance, that level of focus needs to be sustained through that duration. And so I was flashing back to the times where we had to do a session in the morning, then have our strength and conditioning, then go in the evening, have our team training. And if your body is fatigued, if your body is tired, there is no concentration, there's no mental concentration, or vice versa. If your brain is not in the game, then your body doesn't really want to be there. You're constantly distracted. You're doing everything else around the court, as opposed to actually concentrate on the ball and playing. And so I knew what I wanted to, the end goal to be, and what the products, how the products can benefit the athletes. So I worked backwards. I said, okay, this is the end goal. Let's now break it down. Mental focus, physical performance, and energy. Okay, so what are the compounds? And I started, you know, ordering them, testing them individually, testing the purity of them, then combining them, see how the combined products will work, how does it look at molecular level, do these actually work, what are the doses, and so just, you know, months of research and just testing every single thing, and quite lucky to have access to my labs and have the labs and I have the team to help me actually perform these tests and document them and put them all together. So yeah, it's been a very wonderful ride chemistry.
Oh, I love it. Oh my gosh, what a ton of work, like going through it that way. But I mean, worth it for like a quality, like end result, right? Like you want something you could kind of have integrity with and have your name on and stand behind it. And it's cool that you reverse engineered it by identifying what an athlete is and what are the characteristics, what are the these elements that are important to them and that help optimize their mental and physical performance, you know? So it's cool that you went about it that way. I just think that's so cool. So what are some, I mean, I know that you are super busy with everything that you have on your plate. Like, what are some of your favorite tools throughout the day that help you, you know, optimize your mental performance? Like, how do you get to be the better version of yourself that Dominika gets to see, right? She hopefully gets to see Mo 2.0 more than she does like Mo negative two. So yeah, how do you keep yourself at that level?
I think for me, the biggest kind of player is my sleep. I think it's my sleep, because that's when your body actually gets the time to process everything that has happened throughout the day. I mean, I have really long days. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening to you do, as well as being high performers. But my day starts at 4:30 in the morning and goes all the way until 8-9 o'clock in the evening. And so if I don't prioritize that, you know, 7-8 hours in bed and for my sleep, then I just can't function. I think for me, sleep is the main part. And second thing is moving, you know, at least moving around, doing at least, if I have to go for a walk with Buffy, my dog, if I have to go for a walk with her, then at least getting some movement in, it would really help me. I try and get in, even if I can, half an hour session in the gym. But yeah, moving and sleep, I think these two definitely helps my mental performance 100%.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because with what you're doing, like you're can probably be pretty monotonous at times too, or like lots of time, kind of just lots of like mental energy that it takes to do what you do. So you kind of have to like, you know, expand your vision and like go stand outside and give yourself like a landscape to focus on, to kind of get outside of your head and your screen and your beaker, like whatever you're looking at. So yeah, those are things I always kind of talk about, like sleep and getting outside and you know, moving your body, you know, those are important. We have so many blogs now that I've like been putting up the blogs like nobody's business up on the website, Ready, Set, Mindful. But it's, yeah, those, you can never talk about those enough, right? The importance of those things, because you can't make anything work without the sleep, especially, right? Your whole life's going to go, your whole day's going to be shit if you're not sleeping well.
Yeah. I mean, get your sleep. Your life is going to be a lot better. Your mood is going to be a lot better. Your physical performance is going to be a lot better. Just and it's not a lot. 7-8 hours a day, and do anything else you want during the day. But yeah, please prioritize your sleep. I think that it's very important.
Prioritize your sleep. It's true. And what do you have any like mindfulness practice, since it's ReadySetMindful.com, like all about mindfulness. Do you have any practices that you do throughout the day, or anything that you feel like helps you, and or anything you're curious about kind of adding into your routine?
Yeah, I think
no judgment if not.
First thing I do in the morning is grab my phone and my headphones and tune in into Ready Set Mindful YouTube channel, and off I go.
gold stars for you.
but the days that I can't, and I feel like I need a little bit more for me to actually get started, and it's a tough day to tackle, and I need a bit more time to get started, then Buffy just takes me out for a walk, and I think that's we're quite lucky to have a really peaceful nature around us. So I think that's what I do. I've never been good at meditating as much as I would have loved to, and that's something that I think I need to learn how to do it. I feel like I don't know how to do it, I think that's the only part that I do if I need to.
Yeah, I love that. Well, walking, like, I think for meditation too, people have all these different ideas of what meditation is or should be or should look like or all that, but walking meditation is like, it's a thing for sure. So if you're walking your pup, or, you know, Buffy's walking you and you don't have your phone and you're looking at the trees around you and you're outside and you're just like kind of feeling the weather and feeling the temperature, like you're practicing mindfulness. Like you're in a meditative state where you're, you know, if you're not in anxiety, kind of spinning your wheels with your thoughts and you're taking in what you're seeing around you in that moment, right? Like that's so meditative, like it's amazing. So you're already doing it.
100%. Oh, wow. Okay. More of that then. More of that. Yeah.
I love it. I mean, and from what anyone can take from that, like just get a dog and they help so much. Like you struggle to get outside, go and get a dog that's going to beg you to go play fetch and be walked. And like, it's a great way to get outside, right?
Oh, 100%. Yeah. Especially during the pandemic, without a dog that takes you out, it would have been horrible.
Oh my gosh, they bring so much joy. I love our two little, Otis is kind of, he's 6 pounds, 6 pound little terrier. I call him, he's more like a cat. So I really say I have one dog and one cat now, but Logie's my like true dog, and she's a baller. We love her so much. So just wrapping up here, like what is one piece of advice you would give to 17-year-old Mo, who was then at that point on you know, you were on your way move into the UK? Any piece of advice that you'd give to that kid?
I think I would say, I think I would say just try and enjoy the process a lot more, because I feel like you know, coming to the UK, having to learn English, then jumping into the studies, and then in the meantime just making sure, you know, you stay up with volleyball and play and these sort of things, you kind of, especially on the volleyball part, because that's the part that you're gonna, or even on the student life, I think those are the things that at the time you've taken it for granted. You think it's forever, you think it's never ending, you're always going to be doing it, but actually, like just enjoying the sport of volleyball. I think I would tell the young Mo to actually, when you step on that court and when you're on a, you know, playing a match with your friends against somebody else, just absorb that and enjoy that instead of worrying about okay we need to do this, we need to win, we need to finish this game, we need to go to the next. Instead of that, just try and take it in and try and enjoy that whatever it is that you're doing, just enjoy it.
Yeah. It's a good message to just be more present, right? 17-year-old, especially, you lack patience and you just have a lot of urgency and are anxious to get on to the next thing. So it's good advice. I could use that for too. Sure. So where could people find you if they want to connect?
So I myself, I'm on Instagram. So just look for Motic Sazade on Instagram. In terms of websites, my website is Formex. There's a little bio about myself as a founder of the business. But yeah, do visit formex.com. And yeah, so I think Instagram is the best channel for me at the moment, but I'm pretty much everywhere. LinkedIn, here and there, wherever you want to find me, I'm sure you can find me.
Okay. Somewhere. I love it. I will link everything in the show notes if you guys want to learn a little bit about Mo and where to find him. Awesome. Well, make sure if you are an athlete or high performer and you're wanting to optimize your mental and physical performance and you're interested in good, you know, quality, clean sups, go and check out his website, see what he has to offer. He has some great stuff on there. Yeah, awesome. Thank you so much, Mo, for doing the podcast. And I hope I get to see you in the States sometime soon, as soon as like some of all the craziness of starting a business has calmed down a little bit for you. It might take a little bit, but
yeah. Oh, thank you for having me. It was great connecting with you and actually jumping into the discussions. There are some questions that nobody actually asked me before. So thank you. Really
yeah,
good.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, everybody. Well, until next time, go check out readysetmindful.com. Be well, stay mindful. We'll see you on the next episode.
Thanks so much for joining us on this episode of the Ready, Set, Mindful podcast with me, Carrie Bishkay. If you like what you hear, make sure to like, comment, and subscribe to the podcast. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram or visit readysetmindful.com for free resources, courses, and other ways to work with me. Until next time, be well, stay mindful.